Hey, it's NPR's Book of the Day. I'm Andrew Limbong. Today on the pod, we've got two picture books for you that both use color and lighting in ways that really enhance the story of the book. In a bit, we'll hear from none other than Julie Andrews. Yes, that Julie Andrews. She and her daughter, Emma Walton Hamilton, have written dozens of kids' books together, and this latest one plays with shadows in interesting ways. But first, for people with autism, stimming is a way to mediate the sensory experience of the world around them. Now, what that feels like to someone who doesn't have autism might be a little hard to grasp, but in the book Flap Your Hands, author and illustrator Steve Asbell uses a specific technique using colored pencils to try and communicate that. He talks about that and how his own autism diagnosis changed his life with Here and Now's Deepa Fernandez. That's ahead.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit their website to get a quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, and their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. Then just choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
A new children's book is challenging a stigma people with autism face when they stim or use repetitive movements as a coping mechanism. Flap Your Hands, A Celebration of Stimming is a colourful book of movement for young kids and families that encourages expression and acceptance. Steve Asbell is the author and illustrator. He himself is autistic, and he joins us now from Jacksonville, Florida. Steve, welcome.
Thanks.
Steve, let's start with a little context here. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported last year that 1 in 36 children was diagnosed with autism. You personally were diagnosed autistic as an adult. I wonder how that realization changed your perspective about your life.
It actually improved it greatly. It helped me not only accept who I am, but honestly celebrate who I am and just practice self-care better.
You know, I'm curious that you use the word celebration. That's also in the subtitle of your book. This book really is a celebration. I imagine a lot of your life, the way in which you walked in the world, was not celebrated.
I'd say it'd be accurate. Like a lot of other late diagnosed autistics, I learned to mask behaviors that would be considered not normal, whether due to stigma or internalized pressures, where you just pretty much teach yourself not to do the thing that's going to get you made fun of.
When in reality, maybe some of that behavior is actually about calming your nervous system or just kind of regulating in a world that might be overwhelming you at that moment.
Absolutely. I honestly wish that I had somebody to tell me back then what I knew now, which is that even if it's more discreet, there are ways that pretty much anybody can self-regulate in a way that helps them get through the day, helps them deal with emotions, sensory issues, you name it.
And I think I see your book in some ways as a piece of advocacy for a community that is always told to stop behaviors that are actually very helpful to them. And you call it self-care. Some listeners might be aware of behaviors such as flapping, which is in the title of your book, where, you know, you can maybe picture a child waving their arms up and down. And I appreciated that you started your book with a short description for families to understand what stimming is. Can you tell us that?
Well, I'd like to start off by saying that a lot of kids are actually taught from early on to sadly not stim. It's a very personal decision with parents. You know, they're trying to help their kids adapt to the world and be seen in a way that's helpful to them. But I think it's important for readers to realize that flapping, rocking, things like that, they actually do serve a function. They do help just get through any situation.
Yet, as well-meaning parents or caregivers or teachers, as you try to maybe tell a child, because as you just said, you want the world to see them as quote-unquote normal, you're actually taking away their ability to self-calm or to self-regulate, which feels like the opposite of what the intention is.
Absolutely. Because what that can do is that can lead to kids having depression, anxiety. I mean, pretty much teaches a kid that they're less than just because of the way their brain and their body works. So what I want to do is show kids not only that it's okay to do these things, okay to be the way they are, but it should be celebrated because honestly, I look at stimming as just a beautiful dance between the person and the world at large, between the currents of air, the sunlight, everything that person's experiencing in that moment. The stimming is a way of interfacing with that, appreciating it, and coping with it, as the case may be.
Absolutely. You know, I feel like you just described your book, which to me was a very beautiful and joyful, very happy way of allowing kids to be themselves. I myself have a neurodiverse child, and you know, you want them to be able to be themselves. And absolutely. I love that you did all the illustrations, Steve. They're beautiful. Just tell me, because in some ways, the words are the lesser part of the book, as poetic and beautiful as they are, but the illustrations really speak to the joy and the dance that stimming is.
Well, what I wanted to do with the art itself is I actually started out with just 5 different colors with a colored pencil tool. At the beginning of the book, I wanted to show those individual colors scratching together and just looking really jarring and painful to look at. But then as the kids stim, the colors start blending together and kind of forming this flowing tapestry. And I wanted the reader to understand that that's what stimming does, that it's bringing all those senses and bringing them together in a way that's not just soothing, but beautiful and calming.
It is a really beautiful book. Flap Your Hands, A Celebration of Stimming. I highly encourage everyone to get a copy. Steve Aspel is the author and illustrator. Steve, thank you so much.
Thank you. This has been wonderful.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Acorn TV. Acorn TV isn't just good, it's brilliant. With exceptional television from around the world, their romances are more charming, their mysteries cozier, their noirs more gripping, and their comedies cleverer. More clever? Oh, you get it. Acorn TV is brilliant stories told brilliantly. Visit acorn.tv for a 30-day free trial with promo code NPR. So, in a nutshell, Acorn TV. Brilliant.
All right, this next piece comes to us from NPR producer Samantha Balaban, who gathered Julie Andrews, her daughter Emma Walton Hamilton, and illustrator Ellie Mackay together talking about their new book, The Enchanted Symphony. And it really struck me how Mackay uses her background in set design to get the lighting just right for her illustrations. To me, it seems like, you know, quite the process, but the end results are really undeniable. Anyway, NPR Scott Simon starts us off.
Writing a children's book requires inspiration, imagination, and a spoonful of problem solving.
This is Julie Andrews, and I am an author and an actress, and it is a pleasure to be here today, and I'm with my daughter.
Hello, I'm Emma Walton Hamilton. I'm Julie Andrews' daughter and co-author.
Well, our latest book, and we've written many books together, is called The Enchanted Symphony, and it was inspired by a photograph that I saw of a little opera house completely filled with plants of all strange things.
Nearly 2,300 plants, one in each seat of the Gran Teatro del Liceo in Barcelona. The photograph was taken in June 2020, when the opera house had its first concert a few months into the start of the pandemic.
Totally captured our imagination. At first, we just saw the photograph, but then we discovered there was a video. There's a small string quartet, and they come on stage and they play a Puccini piece for this audience of houseplants. The piece is called Chrysanthemum in Italian. So we tried to imagine what might cause an opera house to be filled with plants instead of people, and we came up with the little fable that is The Enchanted Symphony.
Yeah, we didn't want to write particularly about COVID, which was, of course, the reason that the plants were there, just as a statement. So we had to come up with another reason.
And we chose a mysterious fog. a mysterious fog that rolls in and blankets the village and creates a kind of an ennui and a despair and causes people to stay at home.
The Enchanted Symphony follows a little boy named Piccolino. His father is the maestro at the opera house. One day, as the maestro was sweeping the stage, Dame Julie Andrews and Emma Walton Hamilton write, Piccolino wandered over to the grand piano. Gently raising the lid, he played a simple melody that echoed in the empty space. The sound was startling and sweet, and the maestro paused to listen. For a moment his spirits lifted, and he realized how much he had missed music. But without an audience, the orchestra had no reason to play. Of course, Piccolino has an idea for how to bring music back to his village. The Enchanted Symphony is just the latest children's book from Dame Julie Andrews and Emma Walton Hamilton. It's illustrated by Ellie Mackay, and here they are talking about it on our children's book series, Picture This.
Can I talk about Ellie? Can you describe how you make your work, which is so different from any other illustrator that I've been aware of?
Well, it's funny. I thought about becoming a set designer when I was a teenager. And I guess I sort of work in miniature sets. So I build things three-dimensionally. I have a miniature theater or several miniature theaters. And I build sets, I create the scenery, and I create the characters and set them within the little scene. And then I light it, and then I photograph it. So it was interesting because I had to create a theater inside my miniature theater. So I thought about all of the seats and the lighting, the chandeliers, how the curtains would fall and how the stage would be set. And I thought about how I would layer these houseplants further and further away. So it creates that sense of depth.
I don't know how you manage the fog in your illustration, but it's brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
The key things that were uppermost in our minds were a quality of timelessness. We wanted it to have a sort of the quality of a fable or a fairy tale. And the other thing that concerned us was, of course, the fog. And I mean, it really is a character in the story. So we were concerned that the story would lack color. And so, you know, seeing the way in which Ellie's work is transparent and is translucent and luminous gave us the confidence that she would be able to capture both the fog and other colors at the same time, which of course she beautifully does.
I tried to use a lot of vibrant colors for this book because children love bright colors. I was thinking about the palette and I wanted the gloomy scenes all to have this kind of purple feel, lots of purple tones, and then the joyful scenes to be lit up with greens and reds and golds. And I used shadow quite a bit to contrast kind of the darker times with the lightness and play that came with the music.
Really, and I love, Ellie, in the book, how you've woven the music when it's coming out of the great opera house doors, and you feel the sound of the music by the way you've illustrated it. It's lovely. I think that a lot of times illustrators and the writers of books don't get enough time to chat and talk to each other. But in our case, we love talking to our illustrators. And in this case, it was a delight.
Oh, that's so nice. I found it really useful getting feedback. One of the great things about working this way is that it's so easy to change things. So I'll leave one of my sets up until it's actually finalized and approved so I can move things around. So one suggestion was fewer flowers and more houseplants. And so I got busy and made more and more houseplants and filled my little theater full of houseplants. And it's so much fun to just play and create in that way. So I guess that's all part of it.
Yeah, and it was exactly as we sort of imagined it, because truly we do see in our heads what we are writing about, and then to have it come alive so well and so completely right is one of the great benefits, the fun part.
There is one particular illustration that I think is my favorite, which is of Piccolino, our little boy, throwing open the great opera house doors to let the music out into the world. and the music is surrounding him and moving and sparkling, and
it's full of joy.
Full of joy and radiance. Mm. And he is full of joy. He's sort of jumping in the air with his arms in the air, and there's this light from behind him.
I don't know if you knew this, but Piccolino, I was imagining my son the whole time that I was thinking of the story. I was imagining how he would go through things. He loves to grow things. So he grew all sorts of trees from seed, and he brought them out into our front yard and set up a stand like you'd set up a lemonade stand and sold them to our neighbors. So we have trees around our community that he started from seed. And so, yeah, he's that kind of outgoing kid that connects with everyone. So I was thinking about him throughout the story.
We didn't know that. That's just wonderful.
Basically, the little book is about what matters most in your life, and don't lose sight of the really important values, which to Emma and to me are obviously nature and the arts and family and
community.
Community in general, yes.
When we started writing together 25 years ago, my mom was living in Los Angeles and I was living on the East Coast, and my children were very young and in school, and we could only work together early in the mornings. And of course, mom was 3 hours behind. We would actually work via phone at those days, but mom would always come to the phone in her nightgown because it was so early in the morning. And as a way of sort of preparing herself for the workday, she would spritz herself with perfume.
Which even though no one could see or smell, but no. It made me feel a little more awake at 6 a.m.
It was so funny. But now, happily, we live in the same town and we are able to be together in the same room when we write, which is invaluable.
Also, I think we have different strengths, which is what makes us so compatible in a way, because Emma is a wonderful teacher of children's creative writing, and her strength is that she's the nuts and bolts of our books. She does, for instance, all the important things like the first act, the second act, the third act. And I'm more the flights of fancy. I write the mostly write the opening or the pastoral scene or the end of the book or the ends of chapters, or sometimes, well, we each come up with sometimes an idea for a character halfway through the book that might be an interesting left turn, so to speak.
And it's really a process of finishing each other's sentences, as you can probably gather from hearing us talk. And then, of course, multiple printouts and multiple edits and revisions.
And multiple cups of tea to help stimulate us along the way.
Always PG tips.
English breakfast with milk. That's what I'm drinking as I'm talking to you.
I think what we have learned most from working together is the degree to which being creative casts a kind of a magic spell on our relationship, on our lives. That shared time together spent just being creative and creative problem solving.
And playing in a sandbox that is totally individual and full of imagination. It's a lovely place to go.
It's almost like creative weightlifting, you know, it strengthens our relationship.
Yeah, anything like that.
Yeah, it really strengthens our relationship.
Emma Walton Hamilton, Dame Julie Andrews, and illustrator Ellie Mackay, all talking about their new children's book, The Enchanted Symphony. Our series Picture This is produced by Samantha Balaban.
That's it for this week on NPR's Book of the Day. Let us know what you think. You can write to us at bookoftheday@npr.org. I'm Andrew Limbong. The podcast is produced by Isabella Gomez-Sarmiento and edited by Megan Sullivan. Our founding editor is Petra Mayer. The show elements for this week were produced and edited by Chris Bentley, Todd Munt, Eddie McNulty, Ryan Bank, Thomas Danielian, Melissa Gray, Gabe O'Connor, Ashley Locke, and Samantha Balaban. Beth Donovan is our managing editor. Thanks for listening.
Do you ever wish you could get your stories in 3 hours rather than 3 minutes? Or maybe you're sick of doom scrolling, getting your news in bits and pieces. That is where Embedded comes in. We bring you documentary series that will change the way you think about things. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for NPR and the following message come from State Farm. As a State Farm agent and agency owner, Lakeisha Gaines understands the support small businesses need.
every day we get the privilege of helping people to recover from the unexpected, realize their dreams, and help manage the risk of everyday life. And for small business owners, we help them to think about all the things that are necessary so that they can continue to run their businesses successfully without interruption. As a business owner myself, I first reflect back to the experiences that I have. So we look at their liability, we look at their retirement, we look at the interruption coverage, everything that they need in order to continue to operate efficiently.
Talk to your local agent about small business insurance from State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. This message comes from NPR sponsor REI Co-op. REI has gear, clothing, classes, and advice for camping and glamping, biking and hiking, axing and snacksing. Visit your local REI Co-op or REI.com for the million and one ways to opt outside.